Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Extra Point Podcast. Glad you've joined us today. It's Tuesday, June the 4th. My name is Todd Stiles. I'm one of the pastors here at First Family. I'm really glad you're listening in as we bring some further insight, observation, and application from the text and to the text that we preached from last week. And on this episode, I want to answer a question and use that in all frankness as a springboard to really talk to pastors. Maybe we could even say those in church leadership, whether they're vocational or volunteer. I really want to take this episode and share some heartfelt messages, some heartfelt sentiments to those who are leading in that capacity. Admittedly, this podcast is aimed at our general church membership, so let me encourage those who are listening not only to listen to the end, to maybe know how to better pray for your church leaders, your pastors, your elders, your ministry directors, but if you know of a pastor who's not listening to the podcast, or maybe you have a brother, maybe some relatives in church leadership, I would forward this link onto them. I think it will be beneficial. I don't say that in any kind of proud or arrogant way. I simply want to say that's the power of the Word. And I want to bring some insight from the same text that we've been preaching from for the last 2 weeks. And I want to answer this question, is Paul a pattern for pastors? And I'll answer it, first of all, by giving you one word, yes. Now, many believe that Paul was never actually a pastor in the sense that he went to one church, stayed there. They see him not only in the sense of his title, which was apostle, and of course, he was one of those big A apostles. They see him also as a missionary or planter. And there is admittedly some overlap between planter and pastor, missionary and pastor. So even knowing that, that Paul never stayed in one place, he appointed others to pastor, he appointed elders, I do think it's appropriate and even biblical, of course, to say that Paul does serve as a pattern for pastors when it comes to ministry in the New Testament church, in a local church. And I believe we find an example of this in Colossians chapter 1, beginning in verse 24 and going all the way through verse 5 of chapter 2. Now, I didn't mention this in either of the 2 weeks that we spoke on this section. Just by way of review, we did divide this section into two parts. It's verses 24 to 29, and then verses 1 to 5 of chapter 2. It really speaks to the ministry of the church. Paul is very personal in this section, and he relates his role in the church in regards to its ministry and mission. And from this, I find a lot of encouragement and a lot of exhortation in regards to how pastors, church leaders, should think and act. And so I want to just encourage you, first of all, to read Colossians 1, 24 through Colossians 2, verse 5 from this angle. What within these verses helps church leaders, helps a pastor? In this section, I think you'll find this. There is a very strong personal tone. Now, this is not, you know, completely new for Paul. He's personal in many sections of various letters, and this is one of those sections. He has a very personal section in 1 Thessalonians 2. I think in the Corinthians, he does have moments where he expresses, some very personal feelings. So it's not new to Paul, but when we see it within a letter, I think it's wise to dig further, dig deeper, and ask ourselves, what can we learn about church leadership from these insightful, very personal moments that Paul provides and gives to us? In fact, did you know that in these 11 verses, 1:24 through 2:5, Paul uses the word I 10 times. He uses the word me or my 5 times. That's 15 really personal pronouns, personal identifiers. And so it is a very personal section. He's, in one sense, owning his role as the servant of the church, or you could say a servant of the church. He actually identifies himself this way. He says, I am the church's servant. And so he really explains in these verses how that looks, what that looks like, how that unfolds in his life. And so from that, we glean something for church leaders in general, that a life of sacrifice, service, and struggle is just part of leading the church. Now, that can be on a variety of levels. It can be on a spectrum, so to speak. It can be in degrees. But I think we must be willing to come to grips that one of the patterns that Paul sets for us is the expectation that as a leader in the church, sacrifice, service, and struggle come with the territory. Now, upon saying that, I want to just give you three statements. And again, I'm speaking to pastors primarily today, even though that's probably not who's mainly listening. I'll trust it is in the long term, right? But I'm speaking to church leaders, pastors, whether you're a volunteer or vocational. I want to give you three statements that come out of this acknowledgement that in this section where Paul is very personal and shows us that the pattern for church leaders, the pattern for pastors, elders, should be one of sacrifice, service, and struggle. I'm going to explain more about what that means in three statements, okay? Here's statement number one. Church leadership carries an emotional weight. And that's really what I mean by the word struggle. I'm not meaning here necessarily that everything has to be hard. What I mean is that there has to be this intense, personal, and I'll even use the word emotional sense, this emotional weight to the task. This is really what Paul refers to in the opening of chapter 2. He says he has a great struggle for them, and not only for them, but for those in Laodicea. And I think we'd even say within that whole area, Paul had never seen these folks. And yet he comes to them in this letter and says, I'm intensely desiring something for you. I have great emotional fervency for your growth and for your development as a follower of Jesus. You find this in other New Testament letters as well, that Paul has an emotional weight attached to his calling. It just comes with the territory. I think of 2 Corinthians 11:28. Paul there says that in addition to all the physical ways he experienced struggles, he says, I have the daily pressure of concern for all the churches. That's a phrase that seems to say to us, and I think it says it pretty plainly, that there's an emotional, mental, there's an internal weight to this ministry that Paul had as planter slash missionary slash apostle slash pastor. I mean, he felt this constantly. And so it's just clear that Paul's pattern for pastors, at least one of them, is that church leadership carries an emotional weight. And I think it's okay to say this, and I want to say this to fellow pastors listening, that you should feel the intensity and the weight of your calling. So whether you're a volunteer in church leadership, whether you're a vocational church leader, maybe you're leading a ministry, maybe you're pastoring a church, maybe you're a part of a group of elders, there should be a weight. And I would say this to you, if you don't feel that weight, if there's not an emotional intensity to what you're doing, maybe there's a sense of dryness that's really not healthy. Maybe something's awry inside. And maybe there's a distancing occurring to protect yourself unnecessarily. I think there is a sense of necessity for the right kind of emotional weight in the task and the responsibility of pastoring. I always really enjoyed 1 Thessalonians 2. I mentioned that book earlier, but in chapter 2 especially, Paul spends the first part of that chapter just bearing his soul about how dear they were to him and how he, because they were dear to him, how he shared the gospel with him. And then he says this, how he shared his own life. In fact, in that chapter, the first part of it, Paul compares his relationship with them, and he's speaking here of his ministry, the way he conducted his ministry. He says it's like a nurse, and some see that as a word for mother. Maybe it's nursing mother, or maybe it's just a nurse as someone who cares for someone. But he uses this analogy of a nurse or a mother and a father. He says that's two pictures of how he felt about them. And that's emotional intensity, that of a parent, a mother or a father, or even caring for someone who's recuperating, recovering, or is ill, or maybe newly born, that of a nurse, you know, is caring for that type of situation. So Paul uses metaphors, he uses symbols, he uses language that describes an emotional weight. This is part of the pastoral task. And so just keep this statement in mind as you think about entering into and laboring and striving in a ministry that's full of sacrifice, service, and struggle. Here's the statement. Church leadership carries an emotional weight. It's just a fact of the occupation. It's a fact of the role. Statement number two is this, and I draw this again from this 11-verse section. Church leadership demands a missional vision. Within these verses, Paul repeats himself, and he repeats himself in light of the gospel's progressive revelation. In other words, God has revealed his mystery to us. Of course, Christ is the fulfillment of that mystery. He's the end game of God's redemptive plan. But twice he does this, between verses 24 and 29, he highlights that this was his role, to make sure the Gentiles got the full revelation of God's mystery, that Christ was preached, that Christ was proclaimed. He repeats that again in the beginning of chapter 2, saying that this is what he wants them to have all the riches of and the wealth of. It's Christ. He's the full and final expression of God's redemptive plan. So twice, Paul really points to the fact that there is a mission in view, and it's getting Christ to the nations. It's getting Christ, you know, to those who've yet to hear. It's proclaiming Jesus Christ. That's the mission. And in many ways, he's just echoing here. He's just repeating what Jesus said to his disciples there on the Mount of Olives. He said it in multiple ways, on multiple times, that the mission that they were to begin, which I believe began at Pentecost, was to make disciples of all nations. And it's not coincidental that Luke records for us in Acts 2 a listing of the nations present when the church was birthed. Now, that wasn't the first time the church was thought of. The church has always been in God's mind. But when it was formed and physically present, it's not a coincidence that Luke mentions the nations, because this was the task of those early disciples, to make disciples of all nations, to preach Christ. That's what Peter did. He's the first one to step up to the mic, so to speak, and preach Christ crucified and Christ risen. Paul here is echoing that. He's in this line of apostles. He's in this group of the first 12, right? Preaching Christ, proclaiming him. This is the mission of the church. And while there are no longer any capital A apostles, we remain on mission. We send people, we equip people, we raise up devoted followers who share, who witness. Every one of us as Christians should be about making disciples. Now, let me just pause here and give a word of painful application. I think all of you would agree with that. You would agree with that second statement. Church leadership demands a missional vision. It's not helpful to lead a church or to lead a ministry, to be involved in leading a church with a group of men as elders or a team of people in other ministries. It's not helpful to be in that role and not have a missional vision. So if you're wondering, well, how can I find out if disciple making is on the hearts and minds of our people? How can I find out if it's on my mind? I would just do this simple test, either with your team, with your fellow pastors, with your church. I would ask this question and say, I'll give you 10 seconds to think of a name. And by the way, that's going to be a lot of time, and it's very gracious. I would probably go with 5 seconds if you want to know the real answer, but we'll just go with 10 here. To be generous on the first go-around, I would ask this question publicly. Who are you discipling? And I believe this. If it takes you more than 10 seconds to answer that question, disciple making is not on your mind. If it was, you'd have a name, I think, within 5 seconds. But if within 10 seconds, no name comes to mind of someone that's either a new Christian that you're helping develop, someone who's not a Christian yet that you're establishing a relationship with and seeking conversation with so they'll come to Christ, or you're training someone who's a solid Christian to leave the comfort of your relationship and go find someone who's not yet a Christian, the idea of multiplying and reproducing, if in some way your mind isn't automatically gone to a name of who you're working with to see that happen, here's the reality, and we often don't want to admit this, but the truth is we're not discipling anyone. And I've found that question very provocative on my own life, very convicting. I have found it very helpful in team meetings. I have found it helpful to our church just to ask, can you answer this question in 10 seconds? Who are you discipling? And if you can't, just be honest and real with yourself. You're probably not discipling anyone because disciple making is not top of mind. For pastors, for church leaders, we must have a missional vision. And our vision is embedded and centered around God's vision, Christ to the nations, making disciples of the nations, the gospel preached, disciples made. This is what every church should be about. And like I said a few weeks ago in a message, I actually am glad for a variety of the ways that it happens. But we can't make up a mission. We don't get to write our own or craft some newfangled idea. We have been given a mission by the authoritative, resurrected Jesus. We must be about that. And so as a pastor, you must be about that in your language, in your lifestyle, because pastoring or church leadership demands a missional vision. Here's the third statement. Church leadership or pastoring requires a Christ-centric focus. Again, all three of these statements come out of this 11-verse section. And don't you love the way in this section, in two parts, Paul just aims the Colossian Christians, and probably the Laodicean Christians because they read the letter as well. He aims them at Christ, and he urges, he exhorts, he compels them to grow deeper in their walk with Christ, to know all the treasures that are securely hidden in Christ, not to be lured away by things that sound reasonable but are actually destructive. Instead, to be rooted and grounded in Christ, to gaze upon the beauty and the treasure of Jesus Christ. In him are hidden all the jewels of God's work. And so Paul is very Christ-centric, even while he's missional in his vision. So there's a Christ-centric focus. There's a missional vision. I think together when those merge, what you find then is a lot of emotional intensity. I think all three of those are helpful, but they all begin with one thing, and they begin with the third statement. Christ must be our focus. In other words, intimacy is what leads to intensity and impact. I think those three statements could be summed up in those three words. Statement number one, church leadership carries an emotional weight. That's just speaking of the intensity of our role and not shying away from it, not backing down from it, but to admit and to embrace this fact. There is an emotional and right intensity to pastoring and leading within a church. Statement two, church leadership demands a missional vision. It's really about impact, and we do want to see gospel traction, gospel progress. We do desire impact, but knowing that both of those, intensity and impact, come from intimacy with Jesus, a Christ-centric focus. That's the third statement, that church leadership requires a Christ-centric focus. And so whether, again, you're a vocational leader, whether you're a volunteer leader, a single pastor in a church, and what I mean by single pastor is like you're the only pastor in that church, or whether you're part of a group of elders. If you're in church leadership, and I would say especially as a pastor or an elder, these are three things you have to embrace because I think Paul's life is a pattern for these things. These three things are seen in this very personal section of Colossians. He lived them out. He wrote about them. I think they serve as a pattern, as a template for us, giving us kind of some guides in regards to these three things. Now, embrace these three things. Pursue them. Ask God to increase them in your life. Conversely, if they're absent, ask God for a revived heart for His church. Let's go to the other side of that. If they're all-consuming, if they're identity-forming for you, then seek a mentor or a friend to help you develop some rhythms that are actually healthy and not idolatrous. Because these three things, they can, while they're good, they can become a little G God for us. We can be all about impact and intensity and not about intimacy. By the same token, we can avoid these three things and just be almost robotic and non-emotional. There's a balance here, but there is a presence of all three of these things in the life of a pastor, in the life of the church leader. And so I just want to make sure you're digging in this text appropriately. It's been so helpful to me the last, probably month and a half to know this about this section. I didn't preach this to our church. I didn't bring this out in any of the messages. It's more of a some sentiments and more of my exhortation to fellow pastors and to our church membership to pray for your elders and pastors and ministry directors in this way so that they'll have an increasing amount of these three things. Because these three statements, these three words, a commitment to our role being one of sacrifice, service, and struggle, these are not optional. They must be in operation in our lives and to our church. They're visible. They're compelling. And so may God empower us for just such a task as this, that our impact and intensity will flow from our intimacy with Christ.
Thanks for listening to the Extra Point Podcast. To find more content and resources to grow deeper in your relationship with Jesus, go online to firstfamily.church/resources.